You're tuned to Perspectives, a weekly public affairs show which airs every Saturday right here on KTEP. And joining us on Perspectives today is Tom Ang. Tom is a photographer, author, teacher, lecturer, a little bit of everything, and we're going to get to know him a little bit better here. But we're talking with him about his upcoming book, Photography, The Definitive Visual History. And it's an incredible book. It's a tabletop book, a very heavy book, so you don't want to read this in bed and let it fall on you if you fall asleep. It's a great book with great pictures, and we have the honor of having Tom joining us today. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Great. Pleased to be with you. Very pleased.
Well, thank you. Tell us a little bit about, first of all, as a photographer, how did you get started? What is the first picture that you remember, perhaps, that stuck in your mind as a child or when you were younger?
First picture. That's an interesting one. I haven't been asked that before. When you started asking that question, I remember that the first picture that I tried to take was of two swans flying over a lake. I learned a lot from that. I learned that I needed to crop the picture, and I had exposed it wrong, and that whole struggle with that one picture is with me. So I think the reason why it's significant for me is that it was the first picture I actually had to really work on.
Did photography sort of come easy to you? Did it start out as a hobby? Did you have a family member or somebody you looked up to who perhaps introduced you to photography?
Yeah, it's for me, photography, as I worked out eventually, appeals to me because it appeals both to the left and right brain. The creative side, that's pretty obvious, but the right brain side is that when you're working with film, you need to be very precise. You need to be to get the best results. You need to work with kind of laboratory precision, which is something few photographers actually managed, whereas I did. And the result of that is that then I could produce negatives with high consistency in quality, which makes the rest of the whole process very easy. And I have to say that those kinds of discipline I found very useful when I'm transferring them to digital photography. So yes, I suppose in a sense the technical side of photography came easily. The other side is much harder work.
There are many people now, especially with phones, they go around taking pictures of just about everything. And one of your books is called How to Photograph Absolutely Everything. So tell us a little bit about what is it that you tell your people as far as in the book, how to take a picture of something, what to take a picture of?
Yeah, I think people can... One of the things I hope I never do, correct me if I'm wrong, any listeners who've read my books, is that I never tell anyone not to do something or that they must do something. There are so many ways to cut this wonderful cake of photography that there are really no rules. The problem with, say, a picture that's posed that looks posed is that perhaps some other elements in the picture which would help the overall impact of the picture are missing, right? That if it's going to be posed, then maybe the setting needs to be a bit more formal. Maybe the positioning of the body needs to be slightly different, or the whole framing of the picture needs to be different. And then the very posed look then might make sense. So the issue is not the posing, but the issue is how we make a picture, and I mean make a picture mean what we want it to say. And that's what How to Photograph Absolutely Everything is really all about. It's about how we approach different kinds of subjects, taking for granted, of course, you know, all our the technical settings. Once once you've got that straight, and most of the time all your smartphones and everything will deal with all of that for you, then you need to put in this other element. And that comes from you know, it comes from inside, and it's also why it's not the camera that matters, but the person, the thinking, and their own creativity and their intentions. Those are the things that make the picture work.
We are speaking with Tom Eng. Tom is recently put out a book called Photography, The Definitive Visual History. It's pulled out by DK Books, and it traces the history of photography from its origins in the 1800s to the digital age. And we are speaking with Tom about that book and also about his background and the photographs he's taken in the past years. Now, you've also worked, Tom, with black and white. You've worked with film. You've worked with slides. So obviously, a lot of those things are coming to the forefront now because people are into vintage or nostalgia. So all of a sudden, these slide carousels and slides are coming back. Tell us about how you have seen the evolution, the changing transitions from the early, well, from when you started taking pictures with film until currently.
There was a day when I was at university and a technician showed me a listing of digital cameras, and I looked at that, and they said, "Well, you know, there are quite a lot of digital cameras now." All of a sudden, and I realized that actually, I saw in my mind's eye, that the number of digital cameras was rising, and the number of models of film cameras was falling, and that what they showed me was the point at which that the two lines had crossed. And as all economists know, that means a turning point in an industry or in a market. So that was the point at which I decided actually it's time I got serious about digital. And what was interesting was around that time, there were my colleagues, my friends were saying, well, you know, digital is just such a waste of time, costs too much, the quality's too low, it's not art, it's not photography. They sounded just like the artists of the 19th century when they were met with photography. But I persisted. I was in that generation where, because the image files were actually relatively large compared to files that computers were usually working with. They were only working with text files and spreadsheet files. The ruddy things would crash, you know, 10, 12 times a day. I was in that generation where you just had to push through that and master early versions of Photoshop and everything else. But what I could see at the time was that this really could only improve, and that as things improved and as more people got into it, the prices, the cost of all the equipment would also fall, and which is exactly what has happened.
Now,
I was lucky to be in, you know, I was fortunate to be in the right place at the right time.
And what about the fact that, as you mentioned, some of your colleagues when it came out said, well, that's not art, that's not photography, you know, that's very easy, you're having a lot of help. And kind of like, you know, when the Beatles are releasing their CDs and discs on mono, and some people are going, well, mono is the way it should be because everything is good, and remastered is not very good. And as you mentioned, it sounds like the artist of the 18th century when photography came along. So what about that? Has photography changed where it's easy, it can be manipulated so that you can make anything look like anything, or does it still take somebody special, a special knowledge, a special talent to capture these images?
I don't think it takes special knowledge or special talent, unless that talent is for actually just working really hard. Because one thing I think that comes through from from looking at the biographies of the photographers, the lives of the photographers who are in this book, is that on the whole, they worked really, really hard. They put a lot of money and effort into whatever it is they did. The reward was to produce some marvelous pictures, because that's really the only way you can do it. You have to get up in the morning. You know, I ran a master's in photojournalism course, and I had students who after a week hadn't produced a single picture. And I had to remind them that I could not get out of bed for them. And, you know, they'd come to class without their cameras. And if I could, I would have just sent them straight home to pick up the cameras. That is not about talent or special knowledge. It's about application. And that's what all these great photographers have.
We are visiting with Tom,
and it's no different now.
Okay.
With digital, guys have to work hard.
We're visiting with Tom Ang. Tom is the author, creator of Photography: The Definitive Visual History. It's put out by DK Books. And Tom, I like what you write in the beginning. It says we close our eyes and can recall little, but a camera glances for a fraction of a second, yet retains every detail. Mm. And that's incredible, because, you know, people say, well, we have a camera in our mind, and sometimes smells, sounds, whatever will take us back, and that picture comes back. But sometimes, as you mentioned, when you capture that snapshot and you look at it, suddenly you're transformed back to that time, and you can hear, see, and imagine and hear the different stories that that picture is telling you.
Mm. It's an amazingly powerful medium. I think that's why it's become the predominant medium for social exchange. And you know, some may rue the loss of words, but whether we like it or not, pictures are now paramount ways, the paramount way in which people connect with each other these days and keep in touch. And that means as well that it's also a tremendously powerful tool for social change as well. That, you know, we have a world which is fragile, which is under threat in so many ways. We have such an unpeaceful world, and what I hope will happen with photography, what I hope that people will photographers will learn about their medium, is that they hold a really magical tool that can help improve the world. That's really what this whole exercise, that's what all my 30 books and everything is about.
And this book, as we mentioned, we're visiting with Tom Ang, Photography, the Definitive Visual History. You show some incredible pictures, and I'm sure that, and we'll talk a little bit about how you researched and found all these pictures, but there are pictures that bring joy, there are some that bring tears, some that you're going, wow. And, you know, just send different messages throughout the book, and then it's a history, as you mentioned. And it's interesting when you talked about the painters earlier, you say in your introduction also, so began photography's 100 years war with painting, during which it battled to be recognized as an art on its own, right on the one hand, and to be as different as possible from painting on the other. And you take us through that history, and you take us through those struggles. And so let's start, why don't you take us a little bit through the book, as so our listeners at home can use their imagination and just kind of like whet their appetite about this book.
In terms of the preparation for this book, I think it's probably fair to say that I've been researching it all my working life, because I've been looking and reading and studying photography all this time. And also from time to time as well, I've either written historical based articles. Although I'm not a professional art historian or historian of photography, in terms of actually writing this book, it was just one period of extremely intense, long days pulling it together. Because in order to get a book of this length right, one has to have a strong vision and a sense of the tone and language that you want for the book, and that's quite a fragile and labile thing. Then you just have to hang on to it once you've got it, because that's the only way to keep that thread going through the whole book. So it starts with the early prehistory of photography. So we have the optical theories of the Arab scientist Ibn al-Haytham, and then it goes through really I try to concentrate on the personal struggles of the key players, people such as Fox Talbot, who invented a way of making photographs because he was so useless. He was so ashamed of the drawings that he made while he was on holiday. And kids made much nicer pictures than he did. Very competitive guy. And then after that, what happens is that there was this big struggle, as Louis said, between photography trying to find its own identity on one hand, and photography trying to place itself as an art alongside all the existing arts. And it has to be said that other art forms have had similar problems as well, like printmaking has never made it to the same kinds of levels as an oil painting, never regarded with the same kind of dignified a kind of art form as oil paintings. So photography was the same. Lots of people said, well, this is slightly industrial. You're using machines, so it can't possibly be art. And if you follow that struggle, you find that many photographers pre-1900s, in the 1800s, were trying very hard to create works that were like art. So De Marchi, for example, would make a beautiful nude picture, but he would work the negative so much that they made it look as if it had been created with charcoals and with scratches and pencil marks. But then we get to where we're much more familiar, on much more familiar grounds by the 1900s, with the invention or the industrialization of photography by George Eastman. So photography then suddenly becomes popular and industrial, and more and more pictures are then being made. By I think the 1930s, over a million pictures a year were being shot. And then, of course, the whole story explodes into great diversity.
We're visiting with Tom Eng. He is the author and editor of Photography, The Definitive Visual History. It's a DK book, and it's a book that takes us through the history of camera and pictures and the struggles that photography endured in battling art and paintings. And Tom has... If you've been listening earlier, you recall that Tom has carried us through some of those periods. And Tom, you mentioned the 1900s, but I'm going to go back a little bit because during the Civil War, pictures were taken like crazy. There were a lot of pictures taken of the Civil War, of the battles, of people, families, etc. However, because of I guess the bitterness, the people were tired of this war. A lot of those pictures were lost forever because, from what I understand, is that some of those glass plates were sold to greenhouses, and those images just disappeared forever.
I think one of the great tragedies, one of the things that made me most sad in researching this book, was this realizing quite how much we had lost through people not realizing at the time how valuable the pictures were before they, as you said, discarded them, you know, and that there's some photographers, great photographers, who now recognized as great masters, like Munkashi, who went through a patch because nobody knew. He went through a period of neglect. His pictures ended up in the warehouse. They could easily have been thrown out, but they weren't. And we know about the stories of about Vivian Mayer in Chicago, who could well have disappeared from history if her pictures hadn't been sold by the warehouse. Her pictures may well disappear because of litigation, but that's another story. And certainly in the American Civil War, there were photographers who were hoping to make lots of money by selling pictures and albums recording the war, as you said, everyone was sick and tired of it, didn't want to be reminded, and all those ventures failed. So there's this sense in which photography may well document the past, but a lot of it we may not actually want to see, certainly at the time. I think later, given a passage of time, they greatly increase in significance. But throughout the world, vast newspaper archives of negatives and the rest of it have just disappeared, and we're going to be sorry for that in due course.
And it's interesting about the Civil War. People, when they think of President Lincoln, they think of that picture that is shown constantly and people know about it, that was taken a few days before the assassination. And it seemed to survive, and a lot of people look at that picture. And then the other one is the one of him where he's lying in state, and apparently a child found that book inside a library book while he was doing some research.
Oh, I didn't know that. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, let me tell you this, one of the things I'm having to try to stop myself doing is turning this whole book into a work of progress and compiling huge, great lists of revisions and new discoveries and changes. Because, of course, even now I've got a page worth of corrections and new pictures which we really, really got to have in. So that's going to be another meeting with the publisher.
We're meeting with Tom Ang. He is talking about his book, Photography, The Definitive Visual History, an incredible book which takes you through the history of photography from the very beginnings to the modern age, digital age. And what I'm looking now at, Tom, is how it took, the camera took us to other places of the world and to meet different peoples. And that's in your 1850 to 1879, Framing the Unknown.
The really interesting thing about that is how the French government, through a luminary called Arago, took it upon themselves to make the invention available to the world. That's the daguerreotype. Basically, they said to Daguerre, here's an annuity. I think he got a fairly princely sum of 6,000 francs a year. In return for that, we the French government, will own all the rights to the daguerreotype, we'll give it to the world, and which enabled anybody on the planet to set up their own daguerreotype studio. So that's how it spread. It was very quickly spread to the U.S., to China, to India, to China, and even to Australia and New Zealand. But the other aspect of the daguerreotype, which not many people are aware of, is that the key to the its ease of use is that it actually depended on pure chemicals. It needed chemicals at full strength, whereas all the other processes needed you to be able to work out how to make dilutions. So this then means that actually, once you had the chemicals, anybody could do it. So that's how. That's another reason why it spread. Well,
the chemicals are gone now, and we have about a minute to wrap this up. So if you would just kindly brief us on, with the digital age now and the ability to go back into history and get some of those pictures like Jack Ruby shooting Lee Harvey Oswald, the Twin Towers, the World War, all of a sudden we have from black and white to color. Mm-hmm. Tell us about your thoughts on that in recreating history and retouching or reintroducing history to people through digital photography.
One of the important aspects of digital photography was that it showed the public that the image is actually a really very fragile thing. Its link to truth and reality was something that you actually had to work at preserving. So its use to manipulate the image is now so kind of widespread that actually one of the side effects is that actually people are less accepting of the truth of the image. So if we then start to use the image to re-represent the past and history, then we are standing at high risk of actually really confusing everyone about what's going on.
Tom, thank you very much for joining us. And we've been visiting with Tom Ang, Photography, the Definitive Visual History. Tom does have a Facebook page, and you can also go to tomang.com to find out about his various books, his various classes that he offers, and the different photographs that you can see that Tom has put up. Tom, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Perspectives has been taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer, Norma Martinez. Our producer is Dennis Wu. You've been tuned to Perspectives. I'm Louis Sines.